我们正在见证人类历史上第一次有人用极端透明、精密量化的方式公开挑战衰老本身。这个人就是 Brian Johnson。
Brian Johnson。
Brian Johnson。
Venture capitalist who is obsessed with living forever.
It's not science.
And I even used my own son as my blood.
It's just attention.
As of yet undefined in the future.You will die.
The only objective we have is don't die.
大家好，欢迎来到硅谷111，我是雨山。在硅谷 ，Brian Johnson 是一个备受关注也颇具争议的抗衰先锋人物。他把战胜死亡作为人生项目，用极端精确的方式管理自己的身体。
A new era of longevity is here. We already have the ability to go from 30 years of age to zero. And I think we're going to have our first longevity drugs or therapies.In the coming years. And when that happens, the world is going to snap overnight.
Pursuing longevity and achieving don't die is a privilege.
I'm really doing this for humanity.
Well, are you trying any new therapies right now?
Well, one fun therapy we're planning right now is...
他称自己是世界上最被精密量化的人，每天轮流追踪上千项健康数据，家中配备各种监测和治疗设备，并由一个医生团队协助管理健康。这些尝试曾让他的抗衰成本高达每年$2,000,000。他表示，自己的代谢健康达到18岁年轻人中排名前1.5%，体内炎症指标比普通10岁儿童还低66%。根据他的测量，他把自己的生物衰老速度拉回了31年，而仅仅5年前，他还受到肥胖、系统性炎症以及抑郁的困扰。
最近我们在 Brian 来中国举办东代峰会期间，不仅到现场感受了他的抗衰体系，也有机会与 Brian 面对面聊了聊他的抗衰事业。
翻看 Brian 在 YouTube 上的记录，你会看到一个把日常生活拆解成无数可测量步骤的人。清晨4点半起床，红光照射，光疗灯调整生物钟，吃健康配方早餐，力量训练，桑拿、红光治疗、冲击波疗法，进入高压氧舱，边吸氧边工作，并在上午11点结束全天的进食。在网站上，他公开了各类健康建议和自我实验的记录，其中也包括更激进的前沿尝试，例如通过间充质干细胞注射修复受损组织和改善细胞功能，利用 Follistatin 基因疗法促进肌肉生成，提升运动能力等。
需要强调的是，这些前沿抗衰方法大多处于探索阶段，目前还没有足够大规模长期的临床试验证实其有效性和安全性。 Brian 本人也多次提到，他把自己当成试验对象，尝试前沿疗法，并基于监测数据持续调整方案。
这些前沿抗衰尝试并不总是带来积极结果。以雷帕霉素为例，它最初是一种免疫抑制药物，在多种动物模型中被反复证明可以延长寿命，因此被视为最有潜力的抗衰分子之一。然而在 Brian 的个人尝试中，并未观察到明确的正面收益，反而使他持续口腔溃疡、代谢指标异常、心率增加。在停药后，这些变化逐渐恢复。 Brian 表示，几年的雷帕霉素使用可能反而加速了他的衰老，并提升了他的患癌风险。此外，为了改善面部因为胶原流失而呈现出衰老的特征，他接受了来自供体的面部脂肪填充，但出现了严重过敏反应，面部肿胀甚至威胁到视力。而他最为人所知的换血试验，其中一次来自他的儿子，经过6次每次一升的年轻血浆置换尝试后，相关的生物标志物、影像学检查和设备监测结果并未显示出明确的改善。他的这些不成功的尝试也再次提醒我们，前沿抗衰并不等于成熟医学。在缺乏长期安全性与明确收益之前，盲目追逐突破性疗法往往比衰老本身更危险。
If you have to choose 3 of the most important biomarkers that like matters the most to you, what would they be? And what do you recommend to actually improve them?
Probably inflammation, blood pressure, and cholesterol. For inflammation, it'd be HSCRP. And that's just a general systematic inflammation of where is your body? How are you doing? There's more granular levels, but that gives you a nice system level of is your body inflamed and unhappy, or is your body happy? Cholesterol, I mean, depends on how, you could do a very rich profile looking at particle size. So you can do basic things like cholesterol and LDL. You can also do a much more robust looking at LPA and like the particle size, ApoB. So it depends on how robust of the panel, but I mean, obviously the more markers, the better. So blood pressure.
blood pressure.
So basic things like systolic and diastolic, and then central blood pressure, then APX, and so like the five markers for central blood pressure. Blood pressure, I've been doing it daily because we've been doing sauna, and that therapy has a lot of changes for vascular function. So you're looking at how the blood vessels are responding to the heat as expanding. On the inflammation, maybe once every few weeks.
And what can people do to improve these three most important biomarkers?
So the easiest thing to do is to get rid of the bad things in your life. Mm-hmm. So the things like smoking, drinking, fast food, junk food, not sleeping well, fried foods, those are the ones that are the immediate obvious ones. Mm-hmm. And then once you bypass that, it gets into more nuanced, for example, air quality, toxins in food, stress can do that. So there's easy wins, which are, we all know about, then the more granular ones, which take a little bit of investigative work.
So you have also described some of your more experimental therapies as punching through the ceiling. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, what do you mean by that? And how do you choose what are the therapies that you are going to try and experiment?
For example, we just completed with sauna. Mm-hmm. And so if you ask most people in the health world about sauna, they may cite that it's good for vascular function, like endothelial function, like your blood vessels are expanding, you're pumping blood, you're releasing heat shock proteins, which are these proteins that roll around and they pick up garbage and you're like misfolded proteins. But what we did is I think we did the most measured sauna experiment in history. And so we looked not just at vascular function, but we looked at, for example, microplastics and not just in my blood, but also in my ejaculate, which is there was a Chinese study that showed that of 100% of the samples taken from men, 100% of the people had microplastics in both their testicles and their ejaculate. Mm-hmm. Now that's not good because it has negative effects for testosterone, for fertility, all these follow-on effects. And when the world has basically lost 50% of fertility over the past 50 years, it's good to get to a source of a problem. So in our sauna measurement, we were measuring, does sauna change microplastic levels? And nobody in the world had ever done that before. Mm-hmm. And it showed that it lowered mine by 87%. We make these discoveries all the time because we combine therapies, we do measurement. And so it leads us to insights that you just can't find anywhere in the scientific literature.
What's the rationale for sauna to help you eradicate or like reduce the microplastic level?
Yeah, we don't know.
Okay.
So this is the thing is we typically will go into an experiment and we start it and we say, we're going to cast a really wide net. Mm. So in one of our recent experiments, we did 249 biomarkers. Mm-hmm. So we just say, we're going to measure everything, the brain and the heart and the lungs, the microbiome, eyes, like we just measure everything. And then we just see what happens. And sometimes in doing that, you find false positives. So you'll find an effect that it's not really an effect. You have to then do further experimentation. But the value of what we're doing is we're just trying to create intuitions, like where should we point our attention? Mm-hmm. And then once we make this observation, now that we've shown that sauna was effective in reducing my microplastics, I'm sure others will do follow-on experimentation and probably do it more robustly, which is the ideal scenario.
How many times of sauna or like how long of the sessions have you made you able to achieve that result?
Less than 30 sessions. I see. We had also, there was a substantial drop in environmental toxins. Mm-hmm. So we had... there were like 15 toxins we measured, and there was a substantial drop in those after 15 sessions. And then we did more sessions on microplastics. And then we found other things, for example, like there were vascular improvements, which were also good. We also found out that I did an experiment where men need to ice their groin area. Mm. If they don't, that heat has a negative effect, and it will knock out their fertility markers by about 50%. It's not just, and a lot of men will say, well, I don't care because I'm not trying to have a baby. But the problem is it has negative feedback loops on testosterone, on hormones, and a bunch of other important processes. Mm. So again, that's like something where people understand generally sauna is good, but they don't understand it needs to be done in a dry sauna with ice in the groin, and it's going to address environmental toxins and microplastics and vascular function. And so we just pulled all these variables in, and now it's the most comprehensive understanding we've ever had of sauna.
So are you trying any new therapies right now and any plans for the next like 3-5 months?
You know, one fun therapy we're planning right now is spicy foods. So we found some evidence that spice has a number of positive health effects. And so we've tried to acquire certain spicy molecules, and we are now doing lab testing to find out which one we can take so it's low in toxins. And we'll probably start that in the next month or so. But surprisingly, it has pretty interesting effects on slowing down aging and reversing some aging damage. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. I mean, this is the kinds of stuff we find are, it always really surprises me. They sit in these little pockets that are unexpected. But like sauna, maybe we can figure out what kind of spice in what concentrations or what duration. So that's a fun one.
I think a common understanding of taking spicy foods is probably it will increase your inflammation and make you have like little like pimples on your face.
Yeah.
How do you take that? Why do you think spicy food, does it like actually contribute to these issues?
Well, so I guess it depends on what the source is.
Mm-hmm.
So there's many things that you can probably do for spice. So we just started this last week. So I'm not up to speed yet on the entirety of the protocol, but just knowing that that's coming up. Let me think of another one. We recently completed hyperbaric oxygen therapy.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you sit in that chamber.
Yeah.
The air is concentrated very densely. It's like being underwater by 10 meters.
Mm.
And same thing with sauna. We did probably the most measured sauna protocol or HBOT protocol in the world. We looked at, there were benefits we saw in my brain, my DNA, my microbiome, skin. It was just like a whole body reset, which was really surprising to see. It really is a systematic whole body treatment. So that was neat. The problem is that one's not very accessible.
You said yesterday that you're basically using 2039 as your goal to achieve Don't Die, right? And I think a lot of people will think pursuing longevity and achieving Don't Die is a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think the general population can realistically take away from these endeavors?
A lot of people think this is about me. They think I'm doing this for immortality. I'm really doing this for humanity because nobody can achieve good health without the help of humanity.
Mm.
So when somebody has high blood pressure, they're not the person that creates the drug. They take the drug somebody else made. And when you drink clean water, someone else built the water purification system to make the water clean.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all depend upon each other to build systems of health. Now, it's also true that if somebody pollutes the water, everybody is negatively affected.
Mm-hmm.
And so health is actually a shared resource.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that all of humanity has to participate in. And so what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to change our culture to say, hey, everybody, we haven't been as mindful as we could be about our health and wellness.
Right.
And that includes the toxins in our environment. It includes our culture of scrolling all the time. It includes the culture of porn and bedding and junk foods and all these bad habits we have. It's not good for any one of us or not good for anybody. And so my goal of 2039 is to create a focused point of attention to say we have a new goal. And in giving people that goal, I think they have motivation to say, I want to also work towards that goal.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that they are going to do a bunch of expensive therapies. It does mean they will say, I'm going to bed on time. And I'm not going to smoke, and I'm not going to drink, and I'm not going to eat the fried food. So I think it's really giving people motivation and a specific thing they can focus on that motivates them to try to work hard at it.
除了自我试验， Brian 也把这套方法论发展成了自己的东代事业，并创立了公司 Blueprint。
如今这家公司已经从最初 Brian 的个人实验拓展到包括健康餐饮、补剂、护肤与护发产品、配餐订阅以及周边商品在内的完整产品线。今年十月底， Blueprint 获得了$6,000,000的新融资，投资人名单跨越科技、娱乐与风险投资界， Andre Carpazzi、 Kim Kardashian、 Joshua Kushner、 Naval Ravikant， 这些名字本身就足以说明市场正在关注什么。然而 Blueprint 的发展并非一帆风顺。纽约时报报道称，尽管公司在2024年实现了约$4,000,000的年收入，拥有约40,000名消费者，但仍面临不小的财务压力，每月亏损超过$1,000,000。我们与 Blueprint 团队求证， Blueprint 团队表示财务数据并不属实，属于谣言。 但不可否认的是，过去十年里，硅谷对于延长寿命这件事的兴趣不断上升。早在2013年，谷歌就成立 Calico， 研究衰老相关疾病。2022年 ,Autos Labs 获得约30亿美金启动资金，把细胞重编程与再生医学推向新的高度。由 Sam Altman 支持的 Retro Biosciences 在成立之初就融资 1.8 亿美金，如今正在筹集高达10亿美金的新一轮融资，目标是让人类健康寿命增加10年。
与此同时，抗衰也越来越多地出现在主流公共议程里。
11月在华盛顿举行的 Make America Healthy Again 峰会，由美国卫生部长 Robert Kennedy Jr. 和副总统 J.D. Vance 领衔，议题从健康饮食一路延伸到逆转衰老、 AI 医疗、脑机接口等前沿方向。 Brian Johnson 也受邀出席，与 Neuralink 联合创始人以及专注细胞重编程的 New Limit 联合创始人同台，讨论长寿与脑机接口的未来。在资本和产业层面，大型药企也开始把衰老生物学视为下一条创新管线。例如，伊拉利利旗下创投近期领投了细胞重编程公司 New Limit 的新一轮融资，希望推动针对细胞衰老的表观遗传疗法进入临床。而 Novartis 与专注长寿数据的平台型公司 BioAge Labs 达成最高 5.5 亿美金规模的合作，一起寻找针对衰老相关疾病的新靶点。可以看到，从科技富豪到传统药企，再到政策制定者，如何延长健康寿命，正在被越来越多严肃的参与者纳入议程。
作为当下最受公众关注的抗衰实验者之一 ，Brian 如何看待政界、资本与医疗产业对长寿领域日益升温的投入？而 Blueprint 又是如何拿下6000万美元融资？又打算如何拓展自己的商业版图呢？
Now I'd like to zoom out to the greater longevity field. And I think it really feels like we're in a paradigm shift. Mm-hmm. And by that, I'm saying it's not just the tech billionaires. It's not just like all those labs, but rather global private equity, like the ones in Silicon Valley and like even in the Middle East. And also the healthcare investors, traditional healthcare investors like corporate ventures, and also even policymakers.
Yeah.
I think they're really leaning into longevity.
Yeah.
And you were just on a panel at the Maha Summit mm-hmm. with RFK Jr. Mm-hmm. and also the CEO of Neuralink.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, from your perspective, what is driving this shift? And what do you think, looking ahead 3 to 5 years, what kind of innovation or breakthrough would happen in the longevity field?
So what I like that's happening is humans have a ravenous appetite to be healthy,
mm-hmm.
to look great,
yeah.
and to feel great.
Right.
But they find it very hard to look great and feel great because mm-hmm. they feel temptations to do bad things, to
yes.
smoke and drink and not exercise. And it's very hard to do those things.
Right.
And so I think if you look at what happened recently with these GLP-1s,
mm-hmm.
that is, I think, the first categorically successful anti-aging drug.
Right. Okay. Anti-aging.
It is.
Explain it.
Because you know, people associate it with weight loss and appetite suppression. Those are true. Also, it has a lot of benefits for metabolic health, for lower inflammation. It's neuroprotective. And there's more things coming out.
Right.
And so I microdose a GLP-1 now. I microdose tirzepatide.
Wow. You don't seem to need it, right? Not from like controlling your appetite, your food.
Exactly. So
yeah.
I have no need for appetite control. I have no need to lose weight. My body fat and my muscle are top 99 percentile optimal
mm-hmm.
for all men.
Mm-hmm.
So I do it for the longevity benefits, for lower blood glucose, lower inflammation, better mm-hmm. metabolic health. And so this one, I think, is these GLP-1s are an example of how fast longevity is going to sweep the world. What I'm bullish on is there's a few technologies in the pipeline right now that could have real, true anti-aging effects. Not like right now, if I'm doing sauna, it's good for me. Like definitely
right.
good for me in a whole bunch of areas, but it's an incremental and I have to work at it. A GLP-1, you take a shot and you lose 30, 40 pounds and you just feel like a different person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to have our first longevity drugs or therapies in the coming years.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, the world is going to snap overnight and humanity is going to shift its focus to say, we want life. Like, I want to be healthy. And so I think we really are on the cusp of a change that is far bigger than anyone's anticipating, because it's going to coincide with AI progress. AI is going to change society in ways we can't anticipate. So I think it really is. It's a paradigm shift that is probably the biggest one happening right now, mm-hmm. and it's just starting to emerge.
And you think in the next 3 to 5 years, maybe a new longevity drug could emerge, like the ones like GLP-1?
Yeah, and even if it's not, even if the drug is not generally available, I think in the next couple of years, we will see AI-led discoveries, whether it be in animals or whether it be in small trials, that will show dramatic effects. Mm-hmm. And so even though it's not a mass market product, it will be very clear from the studies and the evidence that a new era of longevity is here.
Have you seen or have you observed any new promising molecules?
The biggest ones happening right now are, you know, for example, the transcription factors, the OSK, the Yamanaka factors.
Yeah.
So this is like the idea for most people. So if you have a man and a woman that are each 30 years of age and they create the man's sperm and the woman's egg come together, the 30-year-old sperm and the 30-year-old egg combine and then it becomes zero. It goes back to a baby, right? The embryo becomes day zero. Mm-hmm. And so in our biology, we already have the ability to go from 30 years of age to zero. Mm-hmm. And that happens every generation as we make new babies. And so that technology exists in our body to take old cells and make them young cells.
Yeah.
And so the same things have been shown in the labs with the Yamanaka factors. You can take an adult cell and make it a pluripotent stem cell. You take it back to an embryo stage.
Yeah.
Now, it's not there yet where there's still some off-target effects. It can still become cancerous. So there's work that needs to be done to make sure it's robust. Mm-hmm. But in the lab, we're showing you can actually reverse age all the way back. And so that's promising because you can start with things like take a liver and take your liver back. You can do so with your pancreas and, you know, other organs. It takes some effort to do a whole body. But yes, like the technology's there and it's being refined, it's being built. And the AI tools we have now are just making that process so much faster to figure out what transcription factors we use and what way and how we structure them. So, and then there was a study out of China recently where they took the protein FOXO3, they did a CRISPR edit, they put it in a mesenchymal stem cell, they injected it in the vein, and then it showed over 50% of tissues had an equivalent of 10 to 13 years age reversal in humans. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the most robust demonstrations. So that study needs to be replicated again. Like first studies, good proof of concept, but somebody needs to replicate it. That was extremely robust, one of the best experiments ever done. So that would give people hope.
So I want to ask you about Blueprint. Mm-hmm. So you recently raised a round of financing from really a wide range of investors. What do you think these people saw in you and Blueprint? And can you share any stories behind the investment?
I mean, basically, it was a round of friends. Mm. So they all have a keen interest in health and wellness. And we're always having conversations. They're asking me about this and that. And I'm sharing what I've learning. Mm-hmm. So it was just bringing people together that care a lot about longevity, mm-hmm. who really enjoy this as a sandbox to play in.
And what's your plan for Blueprint? What's your long-term vision for it?
I'd like us to become the best health provider in the entire world. So right now, if somebody says they want to be healthy, or if somebody has a health issue, trying to either solve your health problem or getting robust care is really hard.
Yeah.
So if you're rich, you can go to a high-end concierge, and they typically want to sell you expensive stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And not all stuff works. So the game is buy stuff. Mm-hmm. But they don't address the underlying problem of behavioral change of, you know, can you stop this bad habit? Can you adopt this good habit? And then on the general practitioner side, most doctors just don't know how to deal with health, or they're good at some basic things, but they don't understand nutrition very well, or they don't understand longevity therapies very well. And then you go to a longevity doctor, they just don't typically have like the breadth and depth to address the person's all their needs of nutrition, exercise, prescriptions, all the above. Mm-hmm. So we've done this with my protocol over the past 5 years. We basically have built the best health protocol in the entire world. Mm-hmm. And so if we can take what I've done, what my team has done with me, and we can take that and we can package it up and give it to other people, then we could compete for best in world. So now if someone says, I'm in, I want to be healthy, we just say, come on in, we'll take care of you. We'll tell you what to eat. you know, when to sleep,
mm-hmm.
what prescriptions to take, how to measure it, how to focus on areas of concern. But we just like build out a comprehensive full stack solution where our motivation is not to sell them stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Our motivation is to get their body to be in pristine health so that the person knows that our genuine intent is they're in spectacular health. So if that's my goal, is that people say it's easy, it's great, they've never felt better, they've never looked better, they've never slept better.
Mm.
So I think we can do it. It requires us to stand up like 8 or 9 businesses at the same time.
Because
mm-hmm. most companies will say, I'm just going to build, you know, this green juice or this supplement or this therapy or this service.
Right.
And we have to do everything all at once. So it's a very big lift. It's ambitious, but I think we can do it.
So I wonder, what could the business model look like? So it's going to be like an annual subscription service, or like, how do you charge people for that?
Mm-hmm. So one is we have nutrition packaged up. So mm-hmm. protein and extra virgin olive oil and your basic supplements. We have skincare, hair care. It's like all of your basic things you need on a monthly basis of just consumables. Then we have biomarkers, which is get measured, find out if you have any problem areas of concern.
Mm-hmm.
Then otherwise, let's keep your biomarkers on a measurement routine so we can see if things are improving or what we need to focus on. Then we have prescriptions. So if you want to start microdosing a GLP-1, if you have a blood pressure medication, if you're on a statin, like whatever that may be. We have telehealth. So you have a doctor who's engaged, be like, all right, let's look at the data. Let's go over what you're doing now. Then protocols. So in the context of a community where a lot of people struggle to do things on their own, but they're empowered to do things when others are doing them.
Right.
So if you go to bed on time and we're friends, I may go to bed on time as well.
Yeah.
So you're embedded in a community where good behavior is the norm and you feel more motivated to do it. So basically, we're just taking someone's budget that they allocate towards life. We're saying instead of, you know, spending it on these sources, come over and spend the same money with us.
Mm-hmm.
So we're hoping to do it in a economical way where people are just shifting where they're spending money on food today, send it to us, skincare, hair care, prescriptions, and we bring it all together in a way that helps them make sense of all the data and keeps them in a structured routine where they feel like they're at home, they're being watched over, they're being cared for, they're getting like the best evidence-based care.
Mm. And I think you once mentioned that all of doing these measurements, they are the most expensive part of your longevity package.
Yeah.
So in the services that will be provided through Blueprint, do you think the measurements, the cost could come down or still going to be?
Yeah. So even with mine, the first couple of years, we spent $2 million.
Mm.
Like, for example, when we did our first whole body MRI, we probably spent maybe $200,000 or $300,000. We did all the research on all the scientific papers. We built mm-hmm. our own customer protocol. We had to find an MRI facility to change all their settings, get it done. We had to do it 3 times. And so now the protocol we've built is just commonly out there
mm-hmm.
and you can get it for $1,000 or $2,000. So the price has dramatically dropped.
That's like 10 times decrease.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And like same when we started measuring microplastics, you know, in both blood and ejaculate, it was the first time anybody in the world had done that.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, you have to have a lab that is non-plastic. Like most labs, like most of the things are built in plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to rebuild an entire lab without plastics. That's very expensive, but now you can bring it down dramatically. So we've taken all of our tests and protocols and measurements and made them all very economical. So yeah, it's already dropped like dramatically.
I think in the Blueprint business scope, you also have like clinic here in China. And I think they're probably like one of your first clinics in China. So I wonder, like, why do you choose China to be the first stop of your clinic business?
Yeah.
And any stories that you can share?
If you basically just look at countries on planet Earth
mm-hmm.
and you say, what group of humans do we think would be most excited
mm-hmm.
about the potential of health and longevity?
Mm-hmm.
You know, China is right there at the very, very top. China is youthful and energetic and hungry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Chinese have a fantastic work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 996 is no joke.
Right.
Like that is a tough work ethic.
Right.
And people are hungry for success. They want to climb the ladder. They mm-hmm. want to be so. I think it's a really good match for where China is at as a country, that China is an ambitious country.
Right.
And ambition coincides very well with longevity.
Mm-hmm.
So that match for us is just perfect, where we are partnered with China, we want to grow with China, And just, it's a really fresh place to be.
From a practice level, do you observe any differences between China and the US?
Very similar. We can basically achieve the same quality, the same comprehensiveness in a single experience. And so, yeah, I think China is China's probably the best market we could seed this in terms of replicating the model we've built in the US. It fits with the expertise here, the therapies available, the size of the cities, and you could actually concentrate this and get people to come in. So it's a good match for us.
So I wonder, like, how has your team used AI to change the way that you do things?
Yeah. I mean, when you're a doctor and you look at one marker like inflammation, then it's easy for the doctor to say it's high or low, and based upon that, here's what I suggest you do.
Right.
When you have, you know, 10,000 biomarkers, it's much harder for a doctor to say, here's what I think you should do and why.
Absolutely.
And especially when some of those markers are not well known, they're like up and coming, if they're like proteomics or methylation markers, or you're combining a whole bunch of data points from imaging plus biomarkers. And so what the AI has done for us is it helps us find the patterns in these big data sets that you otherwise can't have a human do. And so we've been able to be successful in finding these patterns. Like we talked about Sana and other things. We've been able to stitch together evidence and new protocols and new insights and new measurement structures because we're seeing such a broad view and we can find these connections. So we're just getting warmed up. I mean, these tools are brand new. We're getting our first wins, but I think it's very promising that we're no longer limited by the number of biomarkers that you can get and then make sense of it.
And then if we have to look ahead a little bit, what do you think AI could do in addition to what you just said?
I mean, Google just showed the first AI-based breakthrough. So a lot of people said the LLMs are cool, but they're not doing breakthroughs.
Okay.
And Google just did their first breakthrough. They showed how to turn a cold cancer into hot so you could have the body identify it and work on it. Mm-hmm. And so AI is now a discovery tool for longevity. And so not only is it useful for understanding very large data sets, it's now in the discovery mode, helping us actually find new pathways for treating disease and also reversing age. And so I think that combination, this is why I think it's that the rise of longevity will be faster and more robust than anyone's anticipating. Mm-hmm. Because we saw this, the first go around with GLP-1s, it's going to happen again with longevity, and AI is going to be the fuel source for it.
Blueprint 产品推出后，迅速引发了广泛关注与讨论。部分用户表示在精力水平、睡眠质量和健康指标等方面有所改善。也有不少人指出产品价格较高，体验差异较大，个别情况下还出现胃肠不适等不良反应。与此同时，部分医学专家指出，目前 Blueprint 产品的成分组合尚缺乏成熟的人体循证医学证据。总体来看，Blueprint 展现了一种极具探索性的抗衰路径，但其有效性与可复制性仍有待更系统长期的科学验证。 Brian 曾提到，在他的抗衰事业背后有一个庞大且高度专业化的医学团队支撑。自 Blueprint 启动以来，他邀请了超过30名医生和健康专家参与这项逆龄实验。 Brian 的医疗团队在发展过程中也经历过人员调整，曾在其纪录片中出现的核心医生之一 Oliver Zoman 已于去年离开团队。纽约时报报道指出，知情人士称 Zoman 对 Blueprint 的部分研究方向和结果表达过担忧，而 Blueprint 团队成员表示 Zoman 的离开与个人健康原因有关。那么到底 Brian 的种种抗衰尝试有多少科学依据？他背后的医生团队又是什么组成？
我们也跟 Brian 的医生 Carl 聊了聊，现在就来为大家揭秘 Brian 抗衰事业背后的医生团队。
Could you tell us more about Brian's team of doctors? How many of you are there? What specialties? And how do you work together?
Yeah, so great question. So the team used to be a lot bigger. And what we've found over time is that that doesn't necessarily make sense. It makes sense to actually have a smaller team that then brings in other individuals who are experts in specific areas. So if we're focusing on hyperbaric, let's talk to an expert in that. But who's overseeing that also? Mike Mallon is been involved. There's other physicians. There's another physician in Ali who's out of Germany, who's really heavy data scientist. We have other data scientists involved, but Mike Mallon, myself, and Ali are the main physicians. And then we're bringing in other people depending on what we're talking about. So the team has shrunk down significantly because we've really tried out a lot of things in the longevity space and figured out what really works. And now we can focus on bringing in individual tests as we need them while we're still focused on the main things that we know are the most effective.
So Brian said yesterday at the summit that he wants to achieve don't die by 2039. And as a doctor, do you think that's actually achievable, and how can that be realized?
Yeah, it's funny because if you would have said that to me, certainly 5 years ago, maybe even 2-3 years ago, I probably would have said it's not possible. Mm-hmm. That has changed. There's some hurdles that are being overcome and how fast AI is going and how it's changing has really changed my opinion about that. And it's made it more where we can see that we've been able to slow down Brian's rate of aging. There's a lot of cool technologies and stuff we've used, but a lot of it has really been the basics, really honing in nutrition, really honing in sleep, reducing risk around different disease processes. And that has slowed things at such a rate that if you can see, imagine in the future, if we get that a little bit slower and we're able to bring in these other technologies that actually then reverse that rate at which we're aging, it becomes a reality pretty quick. And so some of the technologies that have started to happen are being able to reset cells into a state of youth. So
the cell reprogramming, as Brian talked about.
Yeah, so that's happened. But also one of the limiting factors has been cognitive decline. Mm-hmm. We can only right now do so much, but there's been some newer advances and studies that have shown that maybe we can do a lot more. And those things are using like nanotechnologies to repair the blood brain barrier. So the barrier that exists between your brain and your blood. Mm-hmm. And that breaks down over time and results in downstream probably some cognitive decline. And how to address that has always been an issue. But now we're seeing these breakthroughs happen in this space that really have made me kind of stand back and be like, oh, these problems that I didn't 5 years ago see as really for us as humanity be able to overcome now seem more than doable.
Hmm. I'll push you a little bit on that.
Sure,
so,
do it.
I guess in order to achieve don't die, you probably have to reduce your rate of aging from, I think currently Brian is at 0.5, right?
Yeah, he's about 0.5, 0.48, I think was his best ever.
Yeah, and you have to reduce that to zero. Is that right?
No, that's not what I'm saying. So I think we're going to be able to reduce it down to like maybe 0.4.
Okay.
Let's say we keep it at 0.5. Mm-hmm. And at this point, what happens then is the technologies to reverse that 6 months of aging that happens every year become the point where they can reverse 6 months of aging every year. And that's longevity escape velocity. Mm-hmm. So where you can reduce the rate at which you're aging, but then whatever you are aging, we can reverse in addition to all the things that you're doing on a daily basis to slow the rate of all your cells aging. Does that make sense? It's kind of a hard concept.
So these kind of reverse aging, I don't know, like therapies, approaches, are those the ones like cell reprogramming approaches?
That's what we're talking about.
Do you think that's like the magic switch where there's like other switches?
There's other things too. Uh-huh. So I think one of the things is addressing immune dysfunction. So as you age, you get immune cells become dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. And regenerating your thymus, I think the reprogramming, the epigenetic changes and reprogramming is probably going to be the biggest thing, in my opinion. There's going to be other things that I don't foresee and other people don't even foresee, but those couple of hurdles are already being jumped over, and that makes it where I see in, 10, 14, 15 years as possible.
So addressing the immune dysfunction, is there any promising methods like therapies out there that could achieve that?
There's research right now around addressing T cell dysfunction specifically. Mm-hmm. None of that is really commercially available or available for individual people. It's really mouse models and cell models, which is another example is what we're able to do now, and Brian's actually doing this now, is to take cells from different organs and grow them and then test on those cells. So one of the risks that I have seen is as we're going along this journey, being able to test different, how you respond to different treatments, everybody's going to respond a little differently.
Right.
There's risk with treatments. And so you could have adverse effects from these treatments that we're trying out on each individual. But if we can test that in a way, then that actually changes the game a fair amount. So we're not testing and guessing as much on treatments, and we don't have risk of aging and things going haywire and wrong. We can actually grow out cells, test how you're going to respond, and then feel that it's safe. Are we getting the appropriate response? Then let's try this in you, as opposed to just kind of guessing with potential catastrophic events.
Yeah, so you're saying that the approach has to be personal. It has to adapt to one's measurements. So then brings to the next question. So Navarro Ravikant calls Brian one-man FDA, famously calls him one-man FDA. So I wonder, that implies that the experimental approaches that he's taken is based on data on his own body, right?
Yep.
And probably only applies to his situation, right, given the personal differences. So how do you think people should take away from these approaches? Should people follow them with this N equals one data points? How do you interpret that?
Yeah, there's certain things that are really, and actually the majority of interventions that Brian does are actually really low risk. The ones that make the most difference are really low risk. Mm. Going to bed on time is pretty low risk. And and has been shown in multiple populations and different, in so many ways. Mm. It's been proven and reproven. And those are the things that are really compressing Brian's rate of aging the most,
right?
There's other things that
like the follistatin, like the stem cell injections.
Yeah. Not as big of outcomes, right? But as far as the next level of how personalized we're going to get, that's going to happen. We need to get to the point where all these other technologies that Brian is trying, we can individualize them, and we can also make the cost of them decrease to where it is more scalable to everyone. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, how do we get everyone's rate of aging down so that when we are able to achieve longevity, escape velocity, that we can then lower that cost for everyone and make it applicable to everyone.
Yeah.
So what are those things? So that really involves, okay, how do we reduce rates of basically obliterate cardiovascular disease?
Mm.
How do we really get good at detecting cancer early? Not just from a mortality rate benefit, but from a functional benefit. If you catch cancer later, it's more chemotherapy you have, that's more radiation, more bigger surgical intervention. So how do we lower those? How do we improve people's metabolic health? How do we decrease people's systemic inflammation?
Mm-hmm.
How do we make sure that people aren't atrophying, that their bone density is good, that their muscle mass is good? And how do we help people with mental health? Because it's related to all of those other disease processes. Most of those things are what Brian's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's the sleep, the nutrition, the exercise really compresses the rate at which people are aging. It's not just about the rate at which you're aging, though. It's about your functional capacity. Because living a long time, or longevity is just living a long time.
Yeah.
Right? But it's living a long time well, doing the things that you want to do late into your life.
Mm.
And that means the more functional you are, the longer you're going to live. right? And so how do we do that and make that attainable for everyone while Brian is planning on landing on the moon?
Yeah.
Right? And so once we can get him to the point where he's landing on the moon, then, okay, let's look back as a society, as humanity, and say, we've achieved this. Now how do we make it go to everybody?
Yeah, let's talk about landing on the moon. So how do you decide what next for Brian in terms of like reversing aging therapies?
Yeah, that's hard because there's a lot of things available. And I think it is slowly, this is happening so fast.
Yeah.
And there's people that are, it's really interesting because I have patients still that I specifically take care of outside of Brian. Mm-hmm. And people are bringing me stuff constantly. It's sifting through all of that of where the evidence is good and where it's not so good. AI is actually really helpful for this, mm-hmm. like on what the next steps are. We can list out ideas and then have data scientists help us say like, okay, is the evidence for whatever intervention? So spicy foods, right? What's the evidence right now? Like, I can know some of that. I can't know all of it. Mm-hmm. Mike Mallon can't know all of it.
Right.
We come up with lists. We say, okay, this looks like a good intervention. People bring us stuff. I read stuff. Other doctors do. We get a list. We boil it down and say, okay, let's try this. Let's look at all the data around whatever intervention is. So we'll use spicy food. Let's look at all the data that exists. And then what are the markers we can check? Okay. What can we look at pre and post intervention?
Mm-hmm.
And are there other things that we're not thinking of? Well, what are the other risks? And then do the experiment, the greatest N of one experiment in human history. And then let's see what happens. And there's always potential downsides, but like, how do we mitigate those downsides to make it to what's very low risk?
Okay, great. Thank you so much for your time,
yeah,
Dr. Seger. It's great talking to you.
Yeah, it's really nice talking to you.
Thank you.
这就是我与 Brian 以及他的医生访谈的全部内容了。正如 Brian 多次强调的那样，在所有抗衰路径中，真正被反复验证也最具普适性的，仍然是良好的睡眠、饮食与运动习惯，以及稳定而健康的人际关系。与此同时，一些更为激进、尚未经过大规模长期安全性验证的抗衰尝试也伴随着明显的不确定性。 Brian 自身的一些探索案例恰恰提醒我们，这些前沿手段并非没有代价，也并不适合被简单复制。至于 Blueprint 所描述的未来，一个融合生活方式管理、生物标志物监测、医学干预与个性化健康方案的系统，其科学性与可复制性仍有待时间和更多验证。它究竟能否推动人类健康边界，还需要持续观察。但可以确定的是，随着 AI 技术和生命科学的快速发展，关于衰老的理解正在被重塑。这场探索仍在进行中，而真正成熟、可靠的突破，或许正是在这样的尝试与质疑中逐渐成型。
这就是本期视频的全部内容了。听完 Brian Johnson 的抗衰实践和商业规划，不知道你有什么想法？欢迎在评论区告诉我们，也别忘了点赞和转发。你们的支持是我们硅谷101持续做深度内容的最大动力。那我们就下期节目再见啦。